Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today's program is in honor of Veterans Day, Saturday, November 11th. Later in the hour, stories of present-day veterans, and we talk about the poetry and music of World War I and II with pianist Jacqueline Schwab and historian Greg Williams. But first, Veterans Day was originally Armistice Day, the day that World War I was to come to an end. Independent producer Lester Graham brings us the story of one veteran's experience during World War I.
Europe had been at war for more than 3 years by 1917 when President Wilson and Congress decided to send American troops. The propaganda machine started grinding right away. There was no radio yet, but luminaries such as General Black Jack Pershing, who led the American expedition, made recordings that were played on phonographs in fraternal clubs and town halls back home.
3,000 miles from home, an American army is fighting for you. Everything you hold worthwhile is at stake.
Well, they told us we was fighting for democracy, and a war to end wars. That was what they tried to brainwash the people with, you know.
George Thorworth was among the first American soldiers to ship out for the war. In this interview recorded in 1990, he explained that, like thousands of others, he had volunteered alongside his friends and neighbors.
Americans, they wanted to end that war. They didn't want to be over there forever. We just enlisted for the duration, you know.
Over there, send the word over there.
It was supposed to be a grand adventure, but after landing in France, the doughboys quickly found their dreams of glory mired in the brutality of trench warfare. Technology helped make an incomprehensible level of carnage possible. Improved artillery turned forests and pastures into cratered fields of mud and twisted barbed wire. All kinds of new contraptions killed men in gruesome ways. And one of the worst new weapons was the poison gas attack.
I think the most vivid one I can remember is the time I had patrol out, and we had 260 men in the company, and there was only two squads left after the gas attack within for 48 hours, and our gas masks weren't good for only about 24. You go out on patrol at night, and you stick your arm into the dead bodies and stuff. It was terrible up there at that time.
The troops were always short on supplies. Sometimes in the trenches for months at a time, their clothes rotted away. Thorworth says his leggings, socks, and underwear fell apart, leaving him with nothing but a shirt and pants he had to pin together. Food was short. They ate whatever was available.
All our artillery stuff was drawn to horses at that time. When a horse get killed, we'd have slum to eat.
World War I was to end November 11th, 1918. Armistice Day. Veterans of the war crawled from their holes and trenches, found a bottle of wine or cognac anywhere they could, and celebrated surviving. 8.5 million soldiers and sailors had died. 117,000 of them Americans.
Eyes of all star mothers, sisters and brothers, what a sacrifice they made.
I saw one-legged pals coming home to their guns in my dream of the big parade.
In his book, The First World War, Keith Robbins writes, "Huge numbers of crosses peopled the silent landscape. From all over the world in years to come, relatives and friends trooped through these uncommunicative cities of the dead. The cemeteries of Europe housed them, for in the end, there was little to be said for trying to bring the fallen home. It is just as near from France to heaven as from Indiana," concluded one mother. This is Lester Graham.
Now a look back at the 26th Yankee Division of the National Guard serving in World War I. The division was comprised of men from New England, including a handful from Cape Cod. Joining us from our studios at WGBH is Brigadier General Len Kondrachuk. He's the Director of Historical Services for the Massachusetts National Guard, also co-chair of the Massachusetts World War I Centennial Commission and the National Commander 26th Yankee Division Veterans. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
So before we discuss the 26th Yankee Division, give us a brief history of the National Guard. When and why was it formed, and what was its mission?
Well, the National Guard here in Massachusetts, it's the oldest National Guard, organized in 1636, comprised of three regiments. Those regiments still exist. And it was a self-defense force. There were no British soldiers to protect the colonists. And that colonial militia, over the past 380 years or so, has now has modernized into what's called today the Massachusetts National Guard.
When did you enlist with the National Guard, and how did you serve?
Well, I went into the Army after graduating from the Citadel with a commission, and then after briefly serving, I decided to be appointed the Massachusetts National Guard. And I did that for a few years, and then I was able to go back on active duty as the National Guard historian at the Pentagon.
How does the National Guard work with other branches of the military, both historically and present day?
Well, historically, the National Guard, the Founding Fathers decided that the militia / National Guard was going to be the largest military force. And so from 1787 through 1941, the National Guard was the largest military component. And of course, during World War II and after World War II, we had a large standing military and also a large National Guard, but now our operations with the Army Guard and Air National Guard are very much integrated with the Department of Defense commands and those two respective services.
During World War One, how did enlistment in the armed forces work? Was there a draft, or how did that work?
Well, it worked this way. After war was declared on April 6, 1917, the Army was not prepared to take recruits at that time. It just wasn't set up, but they flooded the recruiting stations. But what happened was the National Guard advertised, and because it was such a local institution in Massachusetts and through the United States, you wanted to go to war with your buddy, and so you went down to the Army and you enlisted. Later on, the draft starts also in May, but it doesn't really kick in until August of 1917.
So what kind of training did Guard troops get during World War One?
Well, not a whole lot. Well, the good thing about this, the National Guard had been called to active duty in June of 1916 for 6 months and to seal the border from Mexican invaders. Pancho Villa and the revolutionaries had crossed a number of times. So the Guard sergeants, corporals, and officers had that dose of training. The senior officers had also been on active duty during the Spanish-American War, Cuba, Puerto Rico, and so on. And so that cadre came back home in early 1917, late 1916, and as the recruiting opened to the Guard was allowed to go to war strength, those NCOs trained the new recruits. But it was still a pretty green force when it was called up in July 25th of 1917.
Camp Edwards, now known as Joint Base Cape Cod, was used as a training area for the 26th Division during World War One. So tell us more about the connection between the 26th Division and Camp Edwards.
Well, actually, it was the 26th Division's World War II training ground.
Oh, it was World War II.
Named in honor of its World War One commander, Major General Clarence Edwards. Mm. So the Guard was mobilized at home stations and various camps in Boxford, Framingham, Massachusetts, and Westfield, Massachusetts, and that's where the preliminary training was given prior to going overseas.
What was the history of the National Guard troops being deployed overseas? And during World War One, did National Guard troops expect deployment?
They did. But get this, there was no federal law allowing the National Guard, which under the Constitution was only for home defense or repelling invasion, there was no federal law allowing the Guard to leave the United States. So special legislation had to be passed. And everybody knew they were going to go to France. And, of course, that's where they went.
Put World War One into context when the 26th Division was called up for deployment. Where was the majority of action, and what were some of the major events associated with that time period?
Well, the big thing for the 26th Division was the division had there were no divisions in the U.S. Army at this point, so they all had to be created. And these divisions were huge organizations, 28,000 men, and I like to tell everybody, 14,000 horses and mules, because there were no vehicles at that point in the Army. So it was a huge undertaking to take the National Guards of the six New England states, Massachusetts having the largest one, of course, and organizing into the 26th Division. So that was a huge undertaking. This was going all across the United States. And at the same time, the Army had to build brand new training centers all over the United States. So there was a lot going on in 1917. Of course, then the draft, Selective Service had to start, and the draft and that started as well. So We went from an army of 120,000 full-time soldiers in what we call a regular army, 170,000 National Guardsmen in 1917, and by 1918, we had a 4-million-man army. It was army. It was incredible what went on during that period. So that's kind of the stage for mobilization and to deploying to France.
So was it New England? What regions were contributing Guard members to the 26th Division?
Well, it was all six New England states, but Massachusetts, having the largest National Guard, it contributed 16,000 men out of the 28,000 men.
Mm. We grew from those, the numbers you're saying, up to, 4 million, and I just can't imagine like what conditions must have been like for the 26th Division while in Europe. What was that like?
Well, I want to set the stage. The 26th Division is formally organized on August 22nd, 1917. The division essentially is stationed in Massachusetts. And General Edwards is, through various means, gets empty ships in three ports along the East Coast, including Montreal, and has his division shipped overseas as a complete division. And the entire division arrives in France on this day, in 1917, that is 100 years ago today, the 26th Division lands completely in France. It was the first U.S. Army division to arrive in France, a full division. Mm. Other elements had come from the 1st Division, but the 26th was the first. So that a remarkable achievement for any division, especially a National Guard division. And then it goes into training areas in France. And the French really weren't prepared for a large amount of American troops coming over. And so they were dispersed in various villages and towns in France, and the training began.
Hmm. What action did the 26th Division see, and how was their performance?
The 26th goes into combat into what's called, quote, a quiet sector, meaning that which really wasn't quiet, on February 6th of 1918, just days after the 1st Division. So it's the second U.S. Army division to go into line. And there it holds its sector for several months, and this is your listeners will not understand, but this is all the first U.S. divisions that were coming over were given to the French or the British. They were not under American command because the British and the French were so under strength that they were begging General Pershing for any American unit to come online, and Pershing had to do that. And so the 26th was as I say, the second division to go into line, and it remained on line for 9 months through various sectors in France. And the 26th is rated as one of the best eight divisions in the United States, what's called the American Expeditionary Force. So it does quite well. The esprit was just out of this world, the esprit de corps, because everybody was fighting in local units and with their friends and buddies, and that added to it. Yeah. And it was the largest unit that Massachusetts sent into the war.
Recently, there was a cave discovered in France that was used by the Allied forces during World War I. Tell us more about the discovery and its significance in World War I history.
Well, I had been in these caves several times over the past year myself, so I'm very familiar with it. These caves are located some 40 miles northwest of Paris. And when the 26th Division went online in February 1918, these caves they were limestone quarries, actually, and the quarry was used to build the cathedrals and everything and all the other famous buildings throughout Paris. And so it's a series of maybe 40, 50 caves in what's called the Chemin des Dames area of France, and the Yankee Division troops could sleep there at night and not be shelled by German artillery. And what they did is they made all these in some cases, very artistic carvings and left graffiti. And these caves were sealed after the war because they were on private property. And it wasn't until the last few years that the caves been open to the public and a great amount of publicity, films, and newspaper articles about the caves. Mm.
So as you researched the 26th Division, what documentation was available? And how does the information found in the cave add to our knowledge about the men of the 26th Division?
Well, that's a very good question. I'm in the Adjutant General of Massachusetts, who I work for, has its own military archives. By the way, we have the records of every Massachusetts soldier, sailor, marine from 1775 to 2017, some 3 million records. So as we found names of the soldiers in the caves, We pulled the records, and in many cases, sadly, those soldiers died during the war. But we had a record, and also there was an attempt to take the a photograph of just most of the soldiers of 26th Division just before they were leaving to go on the ships to France, and so we have a photographic record as well through the Massachusetts State Library, I should say.
Was there anything that you found surprising in your research?
Well, in locating soldiers, of course, it becomes very personable. You know, you have the photograph, you have his record, and then as I went through the caves, I went to the cemeteries to see where they're buried. So it's in that case, you know, it was kind of it closed the entire picture for me. But again, it was kind of a poignant thing to see their military service from the beginning. And to see them interred in France.
Yeah, and imagine those photos too. To look at those photos and you know see these really young men, you know, and it really does make it personal, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah. What's been the evolution of the National Guard since World War I?
Well, it's the 1916 Defense Act organized the entire U.S. military, including the National Guard, and that act is still the basic building block for the Department of Defense today. And it set the modern National Guard and has made the Guard a modern force over the years. And the thing about the Guard, here's, you know, we're talking about almost 400 years of history here in Massachusetts. It's been able to change and to reform itself and to modernize when given the proper equipment and training and so on. So now... The Guard has always been called a reserve force, never called up except, you know, in major cases when they needed reinforcements. But now the Guard has integrated all war plans, and it's called up virtually every day to go all over the world throughout the United States. So it's a very effective force today.
Mm. Brigadier General Len Kondratyuk will be giving a presentation about the 26th Division's participation in World War I this Friday, November 10th at 2 p.m. at the Falmouth Museum's On the Green. We'll have a link with more information at our website, capeandislands.org. Thanks so much for coming in and talking with us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks also to Tom Devlin and Doug Shugarts for production assistance in Boston. Coming up after a break, the stories of present-day veterans.